And now it's time for the Earth First Update for February 12th, 2015. I'm Uncle Dennis here in the studio of Free Radio Santa Cruz. Want to let you know that it might be a good thing to have a pencil and paper on hand so that you might write down some of the things that are going to happen. We start off with announcements, and you might want to remember where you got to be and when. I know I have trouble doing anything unless I write it down. So grab that pencil, grab some paper, and start scribbling. Starting with announcements, the California Native Plant Society, Santa Cruz County Chapter, Habitat Restoration Team is having a habitat restoration on Valentine's Day. That's right, this Saturday, February 14th from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. at Quail Hollow Ranch County Park. Linda writes, a lot of wonderful rain recently. It will be excellent soil conditions for pulling French broom, and they do a lot of it up there. With moist habitat, we might hear tree frogs, maybe see some newts and salamanders. Come on out and get a little heart for nature. See you there. How you get there? Well, out of Santa Cruz, head up Graham Hill Road. When you come down into Felton, turn right at the first light on East Diane Road. Go about 2 miles and turn left on Quail Hollow. The park entrance is on the right side, a half a mile up. Meet in the gravel parking lot on the left side of the entrance road. The Habitat Restoration Team is an all-volunteer group working to restore native habitat in the parks and protected lands of Santa Cruz County. Their program provides an opportunity for people to learn about the natural systems that surround them while helping to restore special and wild places. No prior work experience is necessary. Just show up at the park. They welcome individual volunteers from 8 to 80. Wear comfortable layered clothing, bring something to drink, and lots of enthusiasm. They work rain or shine. It's going to be shine, so if things get particularly too warm, they might call it a day. I doubt that. It is winter time, remember? Tools are provided. Bring gloves and water. Be very thankful you don't live in Massachusetts. For more information, contact Linda. She's the program leader. You might give her a call, 831-462-4041. That's 462-4041. Or send her an email at redwoodrn@packbell.net. That's REDWDRN. At packbell.net, or visit their website, www.cruzcnps.org. And coming up, there'll be a celebration with Eric McDavid. It's going to happen on February 21st at 6 p.m. at 303B Mission Street in San Francisco, California, and this story from Sacramento Prisoner Support. East Bay Prisoner Support and Station 40 have collaborated to host an event on February 21st at 6 p.m. The address, 303B Mission Street in San Francisco. Eric McDavid will be there talking about his case, and we give you a very extensive update on that last week. And Sacramento Prisoner Support, along with Eric's lawyers, will be contributing to the discussion as well. There will be live music and food to enjoy. Also, we are currently campaigning to raise $3,500 that will go toward Eric McDavid's post-release endeavors. Please check out the campaign at www.youcaring.com/Eric McDavid. That's youcaring, youcaring.com/ericmcdavid. And please donate if you can, or pass along the email or the webpage to someone who can. And everyone you think may be interested, thank you once again. That event, celebration with Eric McDavid, after spending many years in prison, February 21st at 6 p.m., 303B Mission Street in San Francisco, California. And the 2015 Earth First Winter Rendezvous is coming. Greetings from the colonial-occupied Chumash Territory in what is known as Santa Barbara, California. Here in this serene meeting of coastal sage scrub and mountainous chaparral, we will be hosting the 2015 Earth First Winter Rendezvous. It's going to take place starting in the evening of February 20th, and that's a Friday, and take you on out to the 23rd, which is the Monday, for a weekend of workshops, training, strategy, and fun. What you can expect is Earth First History and Tactics, Strategic Direct Action, information on the Santa Barbara fossil fuel infrastructure, what are the threats to the Sespe Creek Condor Sanctuary, knowing your rights, navigating conflict in your community, genetically engineered trees, a new threat. Here's some things you need to know about this winter rendezvous. Come ready to camp. Bring as much of your own water as possible. No dogs or pets. No drugs or alcohol. Come with the intention to learn to organize and build. Be respectful to the land and those around you. Breakfast and dinner provided. Bring your own dishware. sliding scale donation suggested of $20 to $40. However, no one will be turned away for lack of funds, and directions to the event will be posted to the website a few days before the start. That website is www.efoc2015.wordpress.com. That's efoc2015.wordpress.com. Or if you want to send an email, it's efoc2015@riseup.net. And coming up, the Mountain Justice Spring Break 2015, March 7th through 14th in Southwest Virginia. We still don't have a location for that one. Going to take place March 7th through the 14th in Southwest Virginia. They'll learn all about mountaintop removal, get in touch with all the folks down there. They'll have some workshops, field trips, some chance to do some service in the local community, opportunities to network, and evenings will wind down with panels, music, campfires, and story sharing. Once again, March 7th through 14th, Southwest Virginia, and hopefully they'll post the location sometime before the event. Here is the Buffalo Field Campaign's update from the field, and they are in their week of action. Before this year's buffalo killing spree began, the world's most important and beloved bison herds numbered approximately 4,900 animals. As of this writing, roughly 525 wild buffalo have been killed through hunting and slaughter. America's last wild buffalo population has once again been decimated. By the time you read this, the death toll may be even higher. The Hebgen Basin west of Yellowstone has been extremely quiet this winter until yesterday. A small family group of buffalo migrated west along the Madison River corridor out of the park and into the kill zone. Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks Buffalo Hunt Hotline informed hunters immediately that buffalo were available to kill. With just a few days left in Montana's state hunt, which ends on February 15th, hunters flocked into the basin. Six of these buffalo were killed in 2 days. One hunter shot a buffalo with two arrows without killing it and waited nearly 45 minutes before ending the buffalo's suffering with a rifle shot. Patrols also found a tiny buffalo fetus left by another hunting party. Calving season is just a couple of months away. After this onslaught of being hunted down, the buffalo that remain alive fled back towards the relative safety of Yellowstone. But it's anyone's guess if they will stay safe and or cross the literal line in the sand and fall victims to hunters desperate to fill their tags in the next few days. On Wednesday morning, three stock trailers, one large semi-truck and two medium-sized stock trailers, left Yellowstone's Stevens Creek Bison Trap loaded with wild buffalo. Despite enormous public opposition and the complete absence of any justification for doing this, these buffalo are all headed to slaughter. Approximately 150 buffalo remain inside the trap, essentially waiting on death row destined for the same fate. The buffalo's horrific treatment is sanctioned by MCA 81-2-120, a Montana law that puts the Montana Department of Livestock in charge of wild bison and led to the creation of the Interagency Bison Management Plan. While the Yellowstone National Park is responsible for their own actions, the IBMP would not exist if it were not for the Montana law 81-2-120, and this law must be repealed. These numbers are again approximate counts based on the Buffalo Field Campaign's vigilance. We are unable to report exact capture and slaughter numbers because the public has no access to the trap. We can only view it from miles away. And Yellowstone National Park is not being transparent or disclosing information in a timely manner. The pressure is on them, though, because of the Wyoming American Civil Liberties Union is taking action on behalf of the Buffalo Field Campaign and freelance journalist Christopher Ketchum. This is what Yellowstone doesn't want the public to see. On a brighter note, we had an incredible kickoff to our week of action on Tuesday. At Montana's Capitol Building in Helena, we joined in solidarity with tribal warriors and leaders to rally for the protection of wolves and buffalo. Powerful Native voices were rising up in defense of their sacred relatives, calling foul on the Wolf Kills Buffalo Population Control and the slaughter agreements between Yellowstone National Park, the Confederated Salishan Kootenai Tribes, and the Intertribal Buffalo Council. The rally was organized by Jimmy St. Goddard of the Blackfeet Confederacy and Nikos Pastos of the Confederated Salish Kootenai and Pend'Oreille Tribes. Medicine men, tribal leaders, tribal legislators, along with traditional dancers, singers, and drummers, joined together with the Buffalo Field Campaign and citizen activists to call attention to the senseless acts of violence against wildlife. Many good and powerful words were spoken for the buffalo and the wolf. We shared food, ceremony, stories, and are intensely committed to sharing our collective love and wisdom for the wild, to celebrate these sacred beings and work together to end the status quo. We are deeply honored to have been a part of this very important and sacred gathering and are ready to take it to the next step. There are more Week of Action events coming up tomorrow. Go to the website www.buffalofieldcampaign.org and check on events for Friday the 13th of February. If you want to contact the Buffalo Field Campaign, their P.O. Box is 957 in West Yellowstone, Montana. The zip code 59758. Their phone number 406-646-0070. And the webpage where you can find out all this information and more is at www.buffalofieldcampaign.org. And please remember that the Buffalo Field Campaign is the only group working in the field every day in defense of the last wild buffalo in the United States. And here's news from the Sea Shepherd Campaign. Sea Shepherd defends against aggressive action from poachers. The Sea Shepherd Conservation Ship Sam Simon has successfully defended against the aggressive actions of the wanted poaching vessel Kunlun as it engages in a hot pursuit of the vessel. Despite an attempt by the poachers to flee through drift ice and numerous close-quarter intimidations, the Sam Simon has chased the Kunlun out of its hunting grounds in the Australia's exclusive economic zone into the high seas of the Southern Ocean. Captain of the Sam Simon, Sid Chakravarti, said, "In an attempt to hide their illegal operations and deter us from their pursuit, the poachers first made a dangerous attempt to flee through thick drift ice. When that failed, they tried to intimidate us, making multiple intentional approaches to the vessel, which resulted in dangerous near-collision situations. We have maintained our pursuit for 40 hours in spite of these aggressive illegal actions, during which time the poachers have been unable to engage in further illegal fishing. The captain and officers of the Kunlun have remained hidden behind drawn curtains throughout the pursuit. Bullies are often the biggest cowards, and the Kunlun is no exception to this. The Kunlun and the Sam Simon are now headed in a northerly direction approximately 2,500 nautical miles southwest of Australia. The incident was the second such attack on the Sam Simon in as many days. On Monday, the poaching vessel, Yongding, turned aggressively towards the Sam Simon, crossing within 10 meters of the conservation ship, narrowly avoiding a collision. The Yongding eventually split from the chase and was last seen by the Sam Simon, headed in an easterly direction. Australia's Antarctic territory is under attack from these poachers. We have maintained our pursuit of the Kunlun and will not let them engage in any further illegal fishing activity. However, thanks to the mute response from the Australian government, who maintain an embarrassing silence in the face of this invasion of their waters, one more poaching vessel is now on the loose in the Southern Ocean, said Captain Chakravarti. The Interpol-listed poaching vessels, Kunlun and Yongding, were intercepted by the Sam Simon on Monday, just 50 nautical miles from the coast of Antarctica, inside Australia's exclusive economic zone. Both the Kunlun and the Yongding are on the Commission for the Conservation of Antarctic Marine Living Resources blacklist of illegal, unregulated, and unreported fishing vessels, and are believed to have links to known Spanish crime syndicate Vidal Armadores. While both vessels claim to be flagged in Equatorial Guinea, New Zealand authorities report that representatives from Equatorial Guinea have denied those claims. Meanwhile, fellow Sea Shepherd ship Bob Barker continues its record-breaking pursuit of the Nigerian flag poaching vessel Thunder. For the past 5 days, the pursuit has been heading in an easterly direction. The vessels are now 3,000 nautical miles from the west coast of Australia. On February 5th, the Interpol wanted poaching vessel Thunder illegally deployed fishing gear at 38 degrees 28 minutes south, 46 degrees 47 minutes east, on the Millville Bank in the southwest Indian Ocean. The crew of the Sea Shepherd ship Bob Barker has confirmed that a set of buoys attached to a beacon were set out by the crew of the Thunder under cover of night, indicating that the vessel is resuming illegal fishing activity. The Nigerian flag Thunder has been on the run for 50 days after being intercepted by the Bob Barker on December 17th, inside the Commission for Conservation of Antarctic Marine Living Resources area of the Southern Ocean, engaging in illegal fishing activity. The captain of the Bob Barker, Peter Hammerstedt, believes the vessel is still operating without a license to fish. He said the Thunder is the most notorious of the illegal fishing vessels operating in the Southern Ocean and has been blacklisted by CCMLR for the past decade for its illegal fishing operations. While the Thunder flies the Nigerian flag, I cannot imagine that Nigeria would have granted them a fishing permit. It is my strong belief that not only is the Thunder banned from fishing in CCMLR waters, but it does not have a license to fish anywhere. Captain Hammerstedt radioed the Thunder, ordering them to cease their illegal fishing activity. The Thunder did not respond to the call. The crew of the Bob Barker is now preparing to directly intervene to prevent the Thunder's poaching operations. My action teams are on standby. My crew is on high alert. At sunrise, we will begin our operations to shut down this latest attempt by the Thunder to plunder the world's oceans, said Captain Hammerstedt. On January 16th, fellow Sea Shepherd Sip the Sand Simon completed a mammoth operation to retrieve illegal gillnets from the Southern Ocean after they were abandoned by the fleeing Thunder. More than 70 kilometers of illegal gillnet were retrieved over a three-week period, and over 1,400 fish weighing a total of 50,000 kilograms were returned to the ocean. On February 7th, in poor weather conditions, the Sea Shepherd ship Bob Barker narrowly avoided a collision with Thunder as the approaching vessel made multiple attempts to retrieve its illegal fishing gear from the waters in the Southwest Indian Ocean. The incident comes almost 2 days after the illegal gillnet was deployed under cover of darkness by the poachers at 38 degrees 28 minutes south, 46 degrees 47 minutes east on the Melville Bank. Aware that the poachers were likely to attempt retrieval operations, Captain of the Bob Barker, Peter Hammerstedt, positioned his ship between the Thunder and the fishing buoys, thereby obstructing any attempt made by Thunder to retrieve the illegal fishing gear. Seeing the Thunder approach, Captain Hammerstedt sounded a multiple warning blast from his ship's horn. The Thunder ignored the warning signals and proceeded on a hazardous course, crossing the bow of the Bob Barker. In order to prevent a risk of life to the poaching crew, who were dangerously lined up along the deck of Thunder at the time of the incident, Captain Hammerstedt put his ship's engines in a stern to avoid the collision. The Thunder passed within a mere half meter, that's 18 inches, of the bow of the Bob Barker. I am lucky to have my bow intact. Were it up to the captain of the Thunder, my ship would have sustained considerable damage, enough to jeopardize continued chase. It was an extremely risky maneuver, made even more dangerous by poor weather conditions and fading light. All of this is a clear sign that the captain of Thunder, frustrated by the loss of profit he has incurred at the hands of our successful high seas pursuit, is at the breaking point, said Captain Hammerstedt. The blocking operations lasted for over an hour before the crew of Thunder was finally able to attach a grappling hook to the illegally set gillnet and try to retrieve it from the water. Photographic evidence taken by the Bob Barker shows illegally caught fish being hauled on to the Thunder. Many sharks that were also caught in the nets were thrown overboard back into the sea. Captain Hammerstedt said, generally these crews would rely on bycatch from their illegal hauls to supplement their food supply. The fact that the crew of the Thunder is throwing sharks back into the sea indicates that this particular catch is intended for food as opposed for profit, and it's just one more sign that the poachers are getting desperate after our sustained pursuit. Captain Hammerstedt prepared to block any further attempts by Thunder to re-engage in illegal fishing activity. With weather conditions improving, my crew is currently preparing to launch full-scale defensive action against Thunder. Should they resume their poaching operations, our small boats are at the ready and will engage the criminal vessel. The near collision came 51 days into a high seas pursuit, during which time the Bob Barker successfully disabled the illegal operations of the Nigerian flag Thunder, rendering it unable to poach toothfish. Based on the current market value, it is likely that Sea Shepherd has cost the Thunder upwards of $15 million in lost revenue as a result of their actions. The Sea Shepherd ship Bob Barker has successfully shut down another attempt by Interpol poaching vessel Thunder to poach in the waters of Melville Bank in the Southwest Indian Ocean. The incident began at approximately 2:40 Australian Eastern Daylight Time on February 8th when the captain of the Thunder radioed the Bob Barker to notify of his intent to recommence fishing. The captain of the Bob Barker, Peter Hammerstedt, responded to the call notifying the Thunder that their attempts to fish were illegal and that the crew of the Bob Barker would obstruct their illegal fishing activity by cutting their gill nets should the Thunder attempt to deploy them. At 2:56 Australian Eastern Daylight Time, the Thunder deployed a buoy set marking the beginning of the gill net. The Thunder then headed in an easterly direction away from the buoy set to run out the net. Captain Hammerstedt moved the Bob Barker into position to retrieve the buoy set. Crew of the Bob Barker threw grappling hooks to haul the buoys and began to retrieve the illegal fishing gear. Within 3 minutes, the buoy set was completely retrieved and cut free of the leading line of the illegal gill net. As soon as the buoys were on board the Bob Barker, the Thunder retrieved their severed net and turned their fishing lights off, indicated that they had suspended their poaching operations. And to read more about this and other Sea Shepherd actions, go to www.seashepherd.org.au. That's www.seashepherd.org.au. And monarch butterfly count rises as conservationists warn of extinction in this story by Laura Zuckerman, editing by Dan Whitcomb and Sandra Mahler, World Environment News, Thomson Reuters. A tally of monarch butterflies wintering in Mexico rose to 56.5 million this year from a record low of 34 million last year, but conservationists said the increase was too slight to reduce the threat of extinction facing the insect. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service said the popular orange and black butterfly may warrant Federal Endangered Species Act protections tied to declines in cross-country migrations because of farm-related habitat loss. Serena Jepson, Endangered Species Director for the Xerces Society for Invertebrate Conservation, said scientists had predicted that favorable weather in the butterfly's breeding grounds in the U.S. Midwest and elsewhere would result in more monarchs migrating to Mexico this year than the 56.5 million estimated this week by the Mexican government and that country's chapter of the World Wildlife Fund. Jepson said the latest population estimate for monarchs is the second lowest since surveys began in 1993, and said the butterflies face the possibility of extinction without habitat and other protections that would come with adding the insects to the U.S. Federal Endangered and Threatened Species list. We're happy to see the numbers higher this year than last winter, but we're still seeing a decline of more than 90% compared to the 1 billion monarchs that migrated to Mexico in the mid-1990s, she said. Population losses suffered by the charismatic butterfly stem from destruction of milkweed plants as they depend on to lay their eggs and nourish the hatching larva. The plant's decline is tied to factors such as increased cultivation of crops genetically engineered to withstand herbicides that kill native vegetation like milkweed, conservationists say. Monarchs, singular among butterflies for the regularity and breadth of their annual migrations, are also threatened by widespread pesticides use, logging in the mountains of central Mexico, and development in coastal California, where some of them winter, according to the University of Minnesota biologist Karen Oberhauser. The butterflies, celebrated for their striking beauty and for emerging from the jade-green chrysalis decorated with gold stitching, are roughly divided into two populations in the United States according to their fall migration patterns. Monarchs from east of the Continental Divide fly 3,000 miles to Mexico, while those from west of the Divide, including states like Idaho, make a relatively shorter journey to California. And unfortunately, efforts to grow milkweed to support monarch butterfly populations have fallen afoul of the wrong kind of milkweed. So make sure that you don't plant Oriental milkweed for U.S. butterflies. And wading bird nesting in key U.S. areas plummets 28%. One of the nation's largest and most important wading bird breeding areas, South Florida, which includes Everglades National Park, has seen wading bird nesting plummet 28% below 2013 levels and about 18% below the 9-year average for the area. According to the 20th edition of the South Florida Wading Bird Report from the South Florida Water Management District, an estimated 34,714 wading bird nests were initiated in South Florida during the 2014 nesting season, which ran from December 2013 through July 2014. A significant drop from last year's estimate of 48,291 nests and well below the average of the last 9 years, 42,781. Most wading bird species reduced nesting effort in 2014, but the extent of the decline varied. Of particular note are the small herons, which have shown consistent declines of nest numbers in recent years. Nesting efforts by little blue herons, tricolored herons, and snowy egrets continued to decline, with nest numbers down 83%, 42%, and 47%, respectively, relative to last year, and down 91%, 53%, and 57% relative to the 9-year average. These declines have been especially acute in the Everglades, where numbers have steadily dropped from greater than 1,000 nests per species for a typical year in the mid-2000s to only 4 little blue heron, 7 tricolored heron, and 122 snowy egret nests in 2014. Roseate spoonbills also exhibited reduced nesting effort in 2014. In Florida Bay, roseate spoonbills' nesting effort, 126, was less than half of that of recent years and a third of the 30-year average. In the central Everglades, roseate spoonbills' nesting fell from over 200 nests per year during the last 3 years to only 50 in 2014. Great egret and white ibis nesting effort was also reduced, but to a lesser extent than other species, down only 6% and 10% respectively from the 9-year average. Quoting, an environmentally healthy Everglades region is vitally important to many thousands of wading birds. Clearly, the significant declines in nesting of many tropical typical species of the region tells us that much remains to be done to make it a properly functioning ecosystem, said Casey Ray, who directs the American Bird Conservancy's Beach Nesting Birds Program. The only species that did not experience reduced nesting in 2014 was the wood stork, which produced 2,799 nests, a 26% improvement over the nine-year average. The report suggests that wetter than normal conditions in 2013 led to high water levels in large areas and was conducive to greater fish production, which is a key food source for storks. Most wading bird nesting in South Florida occurs in the greater Everglades. During 2014, those wading birds initiated an estimated 25,529 nests, 74% of all the nests in South Florida. The nesting effort is 28% lower than last year, however, and the decadal average. Lake Okeechobee, another important nesting area, produced an estimated 3,457 nests, about 10% of all the nests in South Florida. This is fewer than half the 8,469 nests that were initiated on the lake last year and down 32% relative to the nine-year average. In contrast to these declines, nesting wood stork returned to Corkscrew Swamp Sanctuary and produced 270 nests. Wood stork have historically nested there in relative large numbers, yet had not done so in six of the last 7 years. The data reveal that several nesting responses used as indicators of area restoration success have improved over the last 20 years, while others have not changed or are getting worse. For example, nest numbers of ibis, stork, and great egrets have increased over the past 15 years and are regularly meeting restoration targets. The report says that the improvement of some nesting responses suggests that conditions in the Everglades have become more favorable to birds, possibly as a result of a combination of altered water management regimes, decadal shifts in climate and annual patterns of inundation within wetlands and a reduction in mercury levels. On the other hand, the decline in stasis of other responses show that current conditions are not comparable with those prior to drainage and in many respects are getting worse. Ecological deterioration is occurring across all parts of the South Florida ecosystem, the report concludes, and this increases the probability of irreversible ecosystem changes that limit the possibility of recovering the essential defining characteristics of the historical Everglades. Nesting targets might become unattainable, the authors say, if ecological conditions continue to degrade and the status quo is not improved on. For further information, contact www.abcbirds.org. And unfortunately, that's all the time we have for the Earth First Update this week. The Earth First Update is produced every Thursday evening at 9 o'clock here on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.3 FM. You can listen to a rebroadcast tomorrow afternoon at 3 p.m. right here on Free Radio. You can also tune in to Free Radio Edmonton on yegradio.wordpress.com, 2 p.m. on Saturdays, 10 a.m. on Sunday Mountain Time. Be sure to click on Search to find that. Or you could listen to Radio Free Moscow in Moscow, Idaho, 90.3 KRFP, 9:30 p.m. on Mondays. Or tune your web browser to radio4all.net. That's radio, the number 4all.net, where you can listen to the Earth First Update online or download a podcast. The Earth First Update is a production of Earth First Radio. It's produced in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz. I want to thank you for listening, and do tune in next week for another edition of the Earth First Update.